So the point of our practice is to be completely alive. Some people misunderstand the practice and feel it has something to do with anxiety or relieving stress, and that practice can be helpful with those things. But that is not the main point. The point of our practice is to be totally and completely alive without the limitations of desire and without the limitations of our own self-interests, the self-interests that distract us from being fully engaged in our lives. Now, in the modern world, in our culture today, especially here, there is a feeling that to be fully alive is related somehow to excitement. In other words, to be fully alive is related to pleasures, and it may be immediate pleasures or pleasures that we anticipate. And to be fully alive is, people feel, is somehow connected to emotional energy, like being on a high. Or to be fully alive is to be noticed, to be admired, or to be famous, that's fully alive. And also, to be alive is thought somehow to be related to obtaining possessions and having more and more. So, now, for example, the idea of going away on a vacation is very exciting. In contrast to the idea of dealing with our daily problems, which are felt to be not so exciting. So, usual feeling is that when we think about going to Hawaii, that's really living. It's really exciting. But cleaning the toilet here at condo, that's not really living, that's just some chore. Several years ago, there was somebody who used to come to condo pretty regularly, and one time they asked me about how to speed it up. You know, wanting to get it. how can I get it faster? I said, well, it takes patience, and it takes knowing how to do the ordinary things, such as when we clean the toilets here on Saturdays. And this person said, well, I don't have time to clean toilets. But in our practice, there is no difference. Going on vacation to Hawaii is to be completely alive, and cleaning the toilets is just as equally completely alive. These activities, there are no difference between these activities. But of course, it depends on your understanding. In Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, there is a chapter titled Zen and Excitement. And Suzuki Roshi says in there, Zen is not some kind of excitement but concentration on our everyday routine. And our tradition here at Kanado for 50 years has been every Saturday morning we take care of this place, including cleaning the toilet. This is our practice, and this is our tradition. We don't worry about whether it's exciting or not when we clean the toilet or get down on our hands and knees and clean this floor. When we do it fully engaged, we're fully alive. So, if we have a problem with our boss, or a neighbor, or a friend, family member, in our practice, that taking care of that problem is the same as going to Hawaii. That sounds funny. But it means practice is to be fully engaged in whatever we do. In the present moment, and in any circumstance. What we learned from our Zazen practice is that this present moment is the only time we are completely alive. The present moment is the only actual moment of life. The past and future moments are not actual moments. So whatever faces us in the present moment is our life. And our practice. And only by engaging with the present moment, the present circumstance, we will feel our life. So we have to do our best to take care of our problems when they arise with their boss or our friend, relatives, and neighbor. It is a misunderstanding. In those situations, it becomes a misunderstanding if we wish we would rather be in Hawaii. If we seek for comfort in an uncomfortable situation, it's difficult to feel fully alive. If we want to avoid problems in our life, and we develop certain strategies to avoid problems, we cannot be fully alive. We have to just be ready. So, when we talk about practice, we are talking about giving our effort 100%. So, it means we go ahead in our activity, even if there's some discomfort, or it is inconvenient, or we say, well, this is no fun. We go ahead. We don't hold back because of how we feel. This is the only way to feel fully alive. So if we emphasize excitement, it means the mind is clinging to some kind of desire, or to pleasure, or to comfort, or to fame. If we cling to such things, we will create a fairy tale world. then we won't be able to engage in the actual world that we live in. So in our Zazen practice, we return to the present moment with each breath. We come back to our breath each moment. We come back to the present moment where everything is included. And even though we may get distracted when we sit, we make our best effort to come back to ourselves. And when we are making our best effort, then our life includes everything. And we are coming back to ourself. And then we have no problem. But if we become distracted from the activity of the moment, and we stay distracted, then the mind is wandering in a fairy tale world and may feel good, but that's not really where we should be. So in Zazen practice, we do have the opportunity to notice when our mind wanders. And that recognition, at that moment, we have a choice. We can come back to ourself, back to the present moment, or we can stay in the made-up world of illusion. In one of his last lectures back in 1971, the year that he passed away, Suzuki Roshi talked about how we can be the boss of everything. You can be the boss of everything. In other words, to not be enslaved by some idea that we create in our mind, and not be enslaved by distractions, but be the boss of each moment. So if we practice with determination, we will return our attention to our breath and not wander off in a made-up world. And we will give up attachment to any idea of excitement. And then we are the boss. But if we choose to stay in a fairy tale world, we become like a child who is demanding that the world provide comforts. And with this demanding, we will separate ourselves from others. And so, actually, practice, our practice means that we make no demands on the world. And we make no demands on people. We make no demands on nature and no demands on the present situation that we're in. This is our practice. And this is the Buddhist meaning of being the boss. But that's not the usual understanding of being the boss, is it? Usually we very often we find that we make demands. People make demands. by wishing that other people or the situation were somehow different. I wish it were different. I don't want life to be different than it is in this moment. If we make demands like that, if we wish for life to be different than it really is, it will put a limit on our life. So our practice has to be complete, 100% complete in every moment, not 50%, not 80%, 100%. Everything has to be included in our practice if we are to live fully in the present moment. For example, if you, when you go to the monastery, and every fifth day is a day off, then you have an opportunity to do your laundry. And so there's a wash area where you take your clothes and you can wash your clothes. No machines, just by hand. And when we wash our clothes, we wash the entire thing. We wash all the clothes. We don't just wash some spots and ignore some other spots. You know, that's not how we wash clothes. We wash the whole thing. And in the same way, our practice is not just in spots. Our practice is to take care of the whole thing. Not just the parts we like. If we are ready to take care of the whole thing that's in front of us, then we won't worry about spots. So when we practice with this attitude, we are alive in a true sense. And everything will be included in the present moment. There's a famous story about the Buddha when he was ready to give a talk to his his followers, and they were all assembled, hundreds of monks assembled in front of him, ready to hear his preaching, his discourse. But instead of speaking, he held up a flower. And only one individual understood. His name was Mahakashyapa. Mahakashyapa. And the story is that when Buddha held up the flower, Mahakashyapa smiled. He smiled. No words were exchanged. Mahakashyapa smiled when the Buddha held up a flower, showed his understanding, showed everything was included, showed that he understood that everything was included in that one gesture of holding up the flower. No words were necessary. So, our practice is to be like that flower and hold ourselves up hold ourselves up like a flower. Just bloom. Just bloom like the flower. As best we can. Some people seem to be better at blooming than others. And they attract our attention. But each one of us is capable of blooming in our own way. And we try to do that as best we can without carrying around any special ideas about ourselves. Just bloom. Some flowers, even in your garden or out in the field, some flowers bloom quite easily, very profuse. They have comfortable conditions, encouraging conditions like good soil, lots of water, lots of light, friendly bees, and no gophers. Lucky flower. Some flowers don't have it so easy. And they struggle to bloom. And their lives are hard. So we can enjoy seeing the flowers in a well-tended garden and strolling through a beautiful garden with beautiful flowers. But what really inspires us is when we see a little flower or a little weed growing through the crack in the wall. We stop. Look at it. I remember when I was a kid growing up in New York, which is of course covered with cement. New York City is covered with cement. And yet, one day, I saw these little weeds or something growing up through a crack in the sidewalk. I thought, wow, it can do that. That's what inspires us when we see the weed coming through the crack in the wall. When we see the weed and the flower coming through the crack in the sidewalk, we are reminded of what practice is and what it means to be alive. So we don't worry about the situation of a flower. Holding up a flower is our practice. And when we practice 100%, it is the flower holding up the flower. It is you holding up you. It is you holding up the entire world. So, just hold up the flower of your life. No need to question the situation that you're in or why it is what it is. Just simply take care of it. And you can be you. And you can always live in the present moment. Does anyone have a question tonight? Yes, Umar.
Les, just wanted to share something. When I used to live in San Francisco, I used to live right next to San Francisco State, and one day I just felt like giving up, and I saw this woman. She used to park her car around the roundabout in Park Merced. Park Merced is this old army barracks area. that's been turned into regular housing. And she had had a stroke. So I would see her walk from, she would park her car, she would straighten her head out with one hand, she'd be holding a ballpoint pen in the other, and she would walk down to the library and to the school every day. I would see her do this day in, day out, day in, day out. She would come to the university, go to school, go to the library and study, and go back. And I would see her walk, and when she would be walking, she would have such a hard time walking that she would be bringing one of her legs in front of the other. And it would take her four times the amount of time that it would take a regular person to walk. And she became my inspiration. When I felt like I was giving up, I saw her, and I saw how much courage she had. I was like, I can't give up. I have all my body parts working fine, and I feel like giving up. I have no right to give up, because this is this person who has all these issues is showing me so much more courage. It was amazing. So I wanted to share that.
Thank you. Yes, please.
So regarding excitement and clinging and being distracted by excitement. So you're new to the practice and you find and you're working on not clinging to these distractions of excitement. I wonder, is it beneficial to not experience that excitement until you are better at not clinging to it? For your example, should you skip the trip to Hawaii if you're finding it too distracting until you're more advanced in the practice, where you're better at being in the moment and not clinging to this excitement, this comfort from the daily discomfort?
No need to delay the trip.
It's just the practice.
Just the practice. Stay aware. Don't get carried away. Enjoy the vacation. Thank you. Yes, please.
I was struck by the being the boss of the moment and being the boss of the moment but not expecting anything from anyone. It made me think of something else I've heard. You didn't say it, but probably most of us have heard the idea of taking responsibility for your own happiness. Kind of imagining maybe could also be said taking responsibility for the enoughness of this moment without expecting anything from anyone else. And that was a powerful idea for me.
Expectations are okay. Sometimes they're important. When we've agreed to do something together, we have expectations of each other. It's what we do when we are disappointed, when our expectations are not met, how do we respond to that? Can we be creative? Can we be creative in the moment of disappointment when expectations are not met?
I actually had two questions. Maybe I'll ask only the first one. Maybe second one, maybe I can talk to you. But you said basically like this feeling about the moment, living in the moment, and not like what should be. Like, you know, actually there was a song, What Is and What Should Never Be. Or how do you reconcile that, you know, how can I reconcile that, telling something like that, who are in extreme situations, you know, like, house is, like, you know, Santa Rosa, Santa Barbara, house is burning down, or mudslide, you know, house is in Puerto Rico, you know, literally the roofs is blowing off, or whatever, all kinds of extremes, wars. You know, children's hospitals getting bombed. How do I reconcile telling somebody in a situation like that, that, you know, that when they're saying that that's not how it should be, you know, that children's hospital should not be bombed. How do I reconcile saying, you know, that you should not live in the moment, you know, just not...
Don't say anything. Just you decide what is your best response to those tragedies. But you don't need to lecture other people on how they should be. You just take care of your own practice. And so if you don't worry about lecturing other people, then there's nothing to reconcile. Just you be the boss. Okay. Thank you. Oh, excuse me, kid.
To understand, based on the previous question, this context, what is the role of compassion then?
The role of compassion?
Yes.
to relieve suffering.
Say enjoy the vacation, does it mean that we travel at work and you enjoy the vacation? Should we have the same feeling about the moment at vacation and the moment at work?
Yes. When you go on vacation, you want to throw yourself into it. And when you're at work, same attitude. Do it.
So, what is the value of story making? And I understand that narratives can get in the way of experience, but we also make stories and share experiences through stories. And sometimes people can even get very excited about the photos that they took in Hawaii, to the point where they're not experiencing the actual trip. So I'm interested in what you think about the value of stories and how to manage our tendency to create narratives.
Stories are very important for human beings. Starting as little children, we love stories. And we love fairy tales. And they stimulate our imagination. They encourage our creativity. They help us see a wider world. Stories are wonderful. But we should know them for what they are. Stories. When we grow up, when we become adults, when we become more mature, when we become more sophisticated, we our good feeling about stories, we start to make up stories to suit our personal interests. And that's when stories can have a negative effect. When we make up stories and pass them off as true, pass them off as real, rather than just symbols of something larger. That's what adults do. Children don't do that. They just enjoy the stories and think about them and then wonder about them. So stories can be extremely valuable for us in our life if we keep them in their place and not use them for our personal gain. That's when we have a problem. I think it's called fake news. Yes, Andy?
Why are we so comfortable living in this fairy tale world? I mean, instead of the real world, do we take the current moment for granted all the time?
To take the which moment?
The current moment, just this moment, do we take it for granted?
Yes, that's the problem. We don't recognize that each moment is special and is to be nurtured. We say, oh, this moment is so ordinary, I can't wait for the moment tomorrow, that's special. And then this part of our life passes by. We take it for granted. That's a problem. Thank you. Yes, please.
So just a story. My dad was a Vietnam veteran and had a terrible job in Vietnam. He was a long-range recon patroller, which was a pretty tough job in Vietnam. He got wounded many times. And I asked him one time what the worst part of Vietnam was. And he said it wasn't the fighting, it was the waiting. He said the waiting, thinking about what was going to happen. And it occurred to me one day that my life, and I think a lot of people's lives, are similar, less intense, but similar. Your life kind of oscillates between good times and bad times. But if during the good times all you're doing is ruminating and worrying about the bad times, you're never present. You know, you're always upset or dealing with a catastrophe, or you're living the good times, worrying about the bad times. And I think that that leads to a lot of anxiety in people and a lot of stress and the fairy tale world that people create to comfort themselves.
Yes.
From that feeling.
Yes. Good. Oh, your dad gave you a good lesson, huh?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because the other comment I asked him, what his greatest takeaway from the war was, and he said that the biggest lesson I learned was there's no consequence. I'm not willing to accept it. You know, when you get wounded in the jungle and you think you're going to die, your life becomes real clear. And he said, there's no consequence in my life now that I'm not willing to accept.
Hmm.
That's a good way to live.
That's good, thank you. Is your dad still alive? Oh, would you thank him for us?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, please.
So you had talked about desires. So I'd like to give an example from my own life of two kinds of desires that are talked about in Buddhism. So human beings are called human desirelings.
Human
beings are also called human desirelings because
desirelings. Okay. Yeah,
desires are so common in us that there are the good desires and the bad desires. The clinging and the craving are the bad ones. The aspirations are considered the good desires. So I injured my leg some time back, and I was going to go into the operating room, and I was sitting there. And there was all this stickiness about what I could do, what I cannot do. So it was spinning a lot of loops in my head. And I just couldn't go with the surgery because there was so much stickiness. It was causing so much confusion about what I can do after surgery, what I cannot do. So I had to turn away. Then 6 months later, I went back again to the OR. The state of mind I had at the time did not have any stickiness or clinging. So it was certain aspirations that I had about where I wanted to be. It was very clean and very, my mind was in a much more malleable state. So it was just effortless and I recovered very quickly too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an example of good and bad desires from my life.
Thank you. Yes, Carolina.
In Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, before, in that chapter that you're talking about, before it says, you're the boss, there's a line that sort of gives me comfort. And I think about it. It says, do things well, in the right time, and everything will be organized. And sometimes I feel a little frazzled, and I'm like, okay, just do things well, and in the right time, and everything will be organized. And then I ask myself, well, what about everything else that's going on? So when we focus on one thing, what about everything else?
Well, what do you mean, everything else?
I can't hear you, I'm sorry.
What do you mean? What do you mean, everything else?
All the other things that I have to take care of, or what's going on in the world, or if it's going to rain, and there's so many things to think about and so many things to take care of. If I just do one thing and I stop to think about all the other things, it feels like I sort of lose control or something. I guess you can't. I can't explain it. When you focus on one thing, you give up everything else.
Well, you can't control the rain. So why worry about it?
Yeah, it's not quite right.
Well, if you...
I mean, I get a lot of peace out of that, you know? Just do this thing, and do it right, and just don't think about anything else. Just do this.
Yes.
And it just, like, that everything else was kind of take care of itself, and it gives me a lot of peace to just think, okay, just do this.
Okay.
That'd be fine. But wait a minute, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little silly. It's just like everything disappears. Or stops existing or something.
You know the... You know about the book, Shine Your Light on One Corner? Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty good teaching. Just shine your light on one corner of the world. You know, in a monastery, you know, everybody has a job, and they take care of their job very carefully and with great attention, and they don't worry about the jobs that other people are doing. They simply trust that they are shining their light on their corner. So when you shine your light on your corner and what you're doing, just trust that everybody else is doing the same. So that way you don't worry about it. Thank you. Oh, excuse me.
So what is your view? So sometimes it feels like you have to spend the current moment to plan for the future, and when you plan for the future, you sometimes think about the past because you're trying to draw experience of what happened. So now you kind of use the current moment to think about the future, reflecting on the past. So what is your view on that? Meaning, I of course would say, I'm being in the moment of thinking of the future. That's one way of looking at it, but I'm not really using the current moment at that point. My mind is in the future, right? Because I'm trying to plan the economy or plan what to do for work or plan something. So what is your view on that?
So sometimes the task of the moment is to plan. So we take care of the planning. And if part of doing the task of planning well means we should explore our experience of the past, then we explore the experience. But if planning for the future is not our present task, then just later, do it later, when it's time, like Caroline says, when it's time. So, thinking about the future is not a bad thing when it's what we should be doing in the present. Thank you. Yes?
I was just wondering, because you were talking about when the Buddha had was in a with all the other Buddhas in like a meeting, and he held up a flower. I don't know which flower, what kind of flower it was that he held up.
Is it important?
I guess if it's not important to the teaching, then it's okay.
I'm not sure anybody really tried to find out what kind of flower it was.
Okay.
Just just the story.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was the lotus flower, that's all. A lot of significance, the lotus flower.
Well, I can't say. But, you know, each of us will have our own particular flower in any moment, so that's the one we hold up. Thank you.